so much for being here, Ms. Catherine Narducci. Thank you for doing this. It's really, really nice of you to come on board, and we're very, very happy and excited to have you.
Thank you.
I have always been an admirer from afar, watching all the projects you've been doing over the years. We're going to get into a little bit of all of them. Just wanted to start maybe right from the beginning. I know you're from New York. Where did you grow up? Did you grow up, what part of New York did you grow up in?
I grew up in East Harlem, 116th Street, between, right on First Avenue, between 114 and 100. See, a real New Yorker says 100. That's how you know, 114 and 115. So First Avenue, which was an amazing neighborhood to grow up in New York.
What was it like? What was Harlem like in that time?
It was colorful. It was beautiful. It was it felt like one. So East Harlem is from 100. I think I'm right. It's from 100, starts 100th Street to like 122nd Street. First, Pleasant Avenue to probably Lexington Avenue. And within that whole pocket, and it used to be a lot, like the Italians would come off the boat, Ellis Island, to there. That was the first Little Italy. They had more Italians coming there than Little Italy or Brooklyn or anywhere.
Huh, interesting.
East Harlem.
More than even like the Bronx area?
Yes, because from Harlem, a lot of the Bronx people were from Harlem. So if you lived uptown in East Harlem, you went to the Bronx. You relocated. If you made it and you made some money, you'd go to the Bronx. If you lived in Little Italy, you'd go to Brooklyn or Staten Island.
Huh. Interesting.
That's how they did it. So wherever, I guess it was, you were closer to the Bronx and people migrated the Bronx, Long Island, as Little Italy would migrate Staten Island, Brooklyn.
And you were born here, right?
I was born and raised here.
Nice. And what did your...
Metropolitan Hospital, 96th Street. I'm New York. New York, and I'm proud of that.
That's amazing. And what did your parents do?
Well, my father did a lot of different things. I know he was a chauffeur for a doctor at one point. He did a lot of things. My mother was a stay-at-home mom and very simple, just
nice.
That. But my mother was also very creative. My mother wrote a lot of poetry, and she sang, and she was very, you know, artistic.
Is that where you think you got the creative gene from your mom?
Yes. I don't think I know.
Yeah.
Yeah. My
That's
mother
awesome.
Was a very big influence on me.
Anybody else in your family? Brother? Did you have brothers or sisters? Are you only child? Or
no, I have two sisters. No, I'm lying. My oldest sister writes poetry too.
Nice.
She's written thousands of poems.
Wow.
Yeah.
I read somewhere that you were hiding the fact that you wanted to be an actress or were pursuing acting from your family. Was there a reason why you felt like you had to hide it? Did you think that they weren't going to be receptive to it, or was it something that you didn't even really try to address? Because I know it could be hard sometimes when you come from a family that doesn't really, I'm Middle Eastern, they don't really accept that stuff much.
Oh.
You know, so I felt maybe, is it something that you purposely kept from, or did you know for a fact that they wouldn't be receptive of it?
It's not that they wouldn't be receptive of it, because I have a very loving, beautiful family. Like, they're not like naysayers or dream crushers, right? But it was that when I would mention it, when I was brave enough to mention it, it was like, wow, what are you, crazy? You're a mother with two kids. Where are you? You're not going to be an actor. You know, like, they couldn't comprehend it. But it wasn't in a, like, a naysayer way. It was more like, what are you talking about? Like, where's this coming from? But it was always in me. I'm just now, it's almost like you're coming out. I'm coming out as an actor, but I've always been an actor. And so it was more that, and it took them a minute to believe that I could do it. Like, once I got, you know, when I got A Bronx Tale, they, of course, then they believed it. But I was a closet case. Like, I was going on auditions and not telling my family. And then finally I told my mother's sister, my aunt, And I told her, and then she kind of got it, and she would come with me on my auditions. And I would buy backstage and go on open calls. I didn't have an agent or anything like that. I didn't have a headshot. I had a Polaroid that I took with an Instamatic camera. And I would send that like in the mail because there was no emails. And I would send it to open calls and stuff like that. But so then when I got A Bronx Tale, they accepted it. They said, okay, this is, you know, whatever. This is what she's doing. And she's doing it. Mm-hmm. But then after that, it wasn't like right out the gate, I just had a career. It was still, I went back to waitressing and trying to make ends meet. And then I got an agent from it though. Mm-hmm. And then I got legit auditions from my agent. Mm-hmm. So I was trying, and then I quit my day job and then became a waitress so that I could do the auditions. I did night from the night to the morning waitressing, and then I would do auditions in the day. And then I remember a couple of people in my family like, all right, come on, that was luck. What are you doing? Like, you got to make money or whatever. And then I kept to it. And then, of course, eventually I would get other things. And I got into class. Yeah. You know, De Niro put me in class while we were doing A Bronx Tale. You know, he said, maybe go get some take some classes. Uh-huh. And then from there, I realized that was another whole world that I needed to know. Because he said something to me that stuck. He said, you know, you got great instincts, and that's how you got here. That's how you got this job. Mm-hmm. But you're going to get to a point where your instincts are not going to kick in, and you're going to need tools to, you know, move forward and do other things. So that kind of made sense to me. And I continued in the class that he had put me in, and then I left that class and went to another class, Tom Waits, and then I just stayed in Tom Waits' class for a couple of years, like 5 years.
Yeah, it's important to be in class, to stress that to actors coming up, to always be in class, always be studying, always be working on your craft.
Always be a student for the rest of your life.
Yeah, yeah.
I learned from when I'm on a job, I never think I know it all. If there's like I'm working opposite somebody who's new in the business or has a smaller role, but they're in the scene with us, I learn from that person just as much as I learn from, you know, the A-lister. Yeah. I'm always open. I'm always open.
Well, you had such a unique perspective on the business. The very first role you ever booked was A Bronx Tale.
Yeah.
Which is crazy to even fathom, from having not having worked on any film ever to now being on set with De Niro, and having that film be it's a cult classic. I mean everybody loves A Bronx Tale. It's a film that every single time it's on TV you watch it,
right?
Every single time. I don't think there's ever been a time where it's come on TV and I turn it off or something like that. It's just so wonderful, right? What was that experience like? Were you afraid? I have a good question. What was the first day of set like when you showed up?
I gotta tell you, it's the weirdest thing, and it's not cockiness, it's not thinking like, who the hell I am, like, oh my God, like this ego thing at all. It was just more of a spiritual thing that I felt like I, for the first time in my life, I wasn't afraid or didn't feel like an outsider. I felt like I totally fit. Mm-hmm. Like I belong here. Like it felt right to me. I didn't feel imposter syndrome. I felt imposter syndrome when I wasn't doing it.
That's
I felt completely like I'm supposed to be here. So I wasn't nervous. Mm-hmm. And that's how come I got the job. I wasn't nervous. Well, I was nervous for a second when I first auditioned with Bob and Jazz in the room, but then it went away really fast. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it has to do with the way Bob works and Jazz works, you know. They're not intimidating people. They want you to be comfortable and they champion you. Mm-hmm. So when I got to set, I remember Bob sat me down and he said, you know, you're here because you beat out a lot of people. And, you know, you were very natural and I want you to stay that way and I want you to be relaxed and know that you belong here and you did a good job and I want you to keep doing what you did. And I felt like very comfortable and relaxed. I was like,
that's okay. Really nice. That's so good to get that sort of, being on set and having them, reassure you like that is always really, really nice.
Yeah, it was such a good first job to be on. If it was going to be any first great thing, mm-hmm. working with De Niro and Chaz and that whole crew was probably the best thing that could happen to me, being them.
Yeah.
And not some other set.
Yeah.
Or other person. Because they kind of, working with Bob, it kind of put me in the lane that I felt comfortable, the way he approaches the work and everything. Like, it just all, like...
Made sense.
Yeah, it made sense to me.
Yeah. Did you guys rehearse ever? Was there a lot of rehearsing going on? Did you guys just show up and shoot? And how did...
Remember? Really just blocking.
Just blocking, wow. So no actual getting together and running lines and nothing.
Oh, actually, I'm lying. I went down to Tribeca and I rehearsed the fire escape scene. Mm-hmm. Like, I did that a couple of times. I went down there.
But nothing like major amounts of rehearsal as well.
No.
That's always interesting and scary at the same time. You know,
yeah, but it just feels good because that's just the way I work. Like, mm-hmm. I don't want to be spent on, like, just spend it all on rehearsal and mm-hmm. then... I like it to be fresh. I don't want to recreate something because it was so good. Right. Like, wow, I'm going to use that again. I'll use maybe like the idea of it, like the kind of like the feeling of what that felt like. But I don't want to recreate it because then it's not going to be in the moment to moment work that I like to do. I like it to be moment to moment and I like it to be spontaneous. And I like to do all my work home alone, figure it out. Not really rehearsed, like, oh, I'll go there and then I'll go there. Just like ad-lib, do the lines and figure out an imaginary, like whatever the set's going to be and then throw it all away, literally throw it all away. And then just go, okay, well, what is the actor going to give me in mm-hmm. this moment? Mm-hmm. It may change whatever I did at home. So I don't like to be stuck in something.
Do you go home and build out the character in any sort of way? Like write down any information about the character? Do you do backstories?
I do. Like the movie I just did with De Niro and Bob, the Barry Levinson movie, I started to figure her out. I didn't really know who she was until I got set. Mm. I was like nervous That's one that I waited to the last minute. I wouldn't say nervous. I want to take that word on and say excited. Mm-hmm. When I got to set and, we've been working on the wardrobe, was all custom made. So that started to make me feel good getting the wardrobe. And then, Barry, I worked with Barry on the Bernie Madoff movie, right. Wizard of Lies. And I played a real person in that too, Eleanor Squillieri. Mm-hmm. And Barry said to all of us at the table read, he said, don't imitate these people. And he wants it to be your interpretation of them.
Right.
So approaching Anna Genovese, that's who I just played in the movie, and I played De Niro's wife, I trusted that, okay, I know, I know my lines. I know what the scenes are. I know who she is. I did research mm-hmm. on who she was and their relationship. But as far as the acting, I want to see what Bob is going to give me.
Right.
So I kind of left that open too. I didn't really want to work on it too much because I'd rather go and see what he's going to give me. How is he flirting with me? How does that make me feel as Catherine mm-hmm. first? Right. And that's how I approach the work. In the moment, at home is something different. It's all different phases. At home, it's this. When I get to hair and makeup, it's that I'm working on. Okay. It's the outside. And then when I get to set and I'm actually looking at the person, mm-hmm. It's like, okay, well, what are we doing here? Like what, and I'm open to receiving completely, mm-hmm. I'm relaxed. I do all my relaxation, which is major, mm-hmm. and I'm just open. And I'm open to what I feel always as Catherine, because I'm going to speak Anna's lines, and I'm never out of a way. It's always going to be me. And what do I feel? I can't put the kibosh on if I'm nervous or I'm upset, or maybe the night before I had a fight and I'm bringing that to work. Well, then I have to incorporate that with Anna, right, and make an imaginary circumstance of, well, why is she upset, and incorporate it with my true feelings coming out with Anna's lines.
Right.
With Anna's words, but my true feeling, and make it make sense.
Yeah.
Somehow.
The interesting thing that I wanted to touch on a little bit.
I don't even know what I said
It made a lot of sense. It did. But when you said that after you had did A Bronx Tale and then you went back to go waitressing, I think that's a really important thing that we could talk a little bit about, because people think it's happened to me. I remember I booked a guest star, my very first guest star, and I was like, that's it. My career is going to be made. And then I didn't book anything for like 2 years. And so that's something very small, but going to working with you know, Chaz Palminteri and De Niro.
Well, I have to
and
tell you another great story. That's why going on the road, down the road, my first time with them was the greatest gift in the world, the greatest gift to get it and it be them. Because Bob said to me, he looked me in my eyes that day on set, and that's why I've always stayed grounded and humble. He said, I want you to know, just because you're playing my wife does not mean when this movie's over, you're going to be a big star. You can't leave here thinking, oh, your career's made and you're going out the gate like that. He goes, you got to know, I got you. You knocked on my door and I got you. I knocked on Marty's door. He goes, I knocked on a million doors. Nobody got me. I knocked on Marty's door. Me and Marty, he opened the door and he got me. And I got you. You're going to go knocking on doors again after this. A lot of people are not going to get you. And that was the best advice I've ever got in my career, because I understood exactly what he meant in between the lines and the whole as a whole, what that meant. And so even, you know, every role that I get, I never think, oh, my God, this is going to be. If I today booked opposite Chris Hemsworth in a DC film, I'm still not thinking that's going to be it. It's like, I hope for the good, and I'm not going to be a Debbie Downer and I go, God, this could be good. But I don't think, oh, that's it, I'm set. Never, ever.
Interesting.
Do I think that?
Do you still audition, or how does it?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah,
you're
had to audition for Barry and Bob, and I worked with the both of
them. What? You auditioned for the new Wise Guys?
Yeah.
You had to audition for it?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah,
huh.
Chris Tardio put me on tape.
That's so funny.
You know, it because I don't want anything given to me. I wanna prove myself, because I'm right now writing these short films. I wrote 7 of them. And say I go to cast it, and I know Chris Tardio could do that role. I still want him to audition.
Yeah.
I want to see. Maybe he's not right for that role.
Yeah, that's true.
Let me see. Maybe it's not what I'm thinking of. Maybe you're not on the same page with the thoughts of how it could be.
That's true.
So, Barry, yeah, they know I can do that, but maybe I can't do what he's thinking about.
And so you just sent them a tape. It wasn't an in-person
thing?
Yeah,
I like it because now I earned it.
Yeah, that's interesting.
And I proved myself, and it's a challenge for me again.
Yeah. How long after The Bronx Tale do you think it was until your next big role? Did a while go by?
I got my next big role. It was about.
I know you were on Law and Order. I know you did a lot of other.
It was a while. It was probably like 95, 96, 97, 98, 6 years.
Wow.
But I was getting like, right, I got
you were
other
always
movies
working,
where
yeah.
I was like little roles. But back then they paid so good. So I was able to kind of make a living. My acting started to override the waiting tables
and
little by little. But of course, once I got Sopranos, I quit the I quit the waitressing.
So you were waitressing all the way up to the Sopranos?
Oh, yeah.
What? That's unbelievable.
And I liked
wow.
it.
Yeah.
I love waiting tables.
Yeah.
I wasn't one of these people who went to work like, oh, God. I love people, and I had such fun waiting tables.
The Sopranos is arguably the greatest show ever on television.
I think it got rated depending on who put it out, but I think Rolling Stone rated it number one and a couple of.
You know what I tell people? I think it's one of the best comedy shows. The Sopranos was so hilarious. Just the writing was so funny. I know it's obviously a very dramatic role, but I think I laughed more watching The Sopranos than any other
You're
show.
Not
it
alone.
Was so hilarious. And it was the kind of comedy that I grew up around.
Right.
It was just very much the kind of humor that I loved. And me and my friends back home enjoyed grew up around a lot of Italians. We got the humor. All of it was so, so funny and all that kind of stuff. There's a lot of stories about The Sopranos, especially about the casting of it. There's like all these crazy stories about how everybody auditioned for every single part.
I auditioned for Camilla.
Oh, you did? Was that the only part you auditioned for?
Yeah.
Oh, so just and then did you audition for Charmaine?
They gave it to me.
Just gave it to you after that. That's hilarious. Do you know how many people auditioned for the Carmella role?
I'm not really sure. No, I know a lot.
I'm sure.
I think a lot.
I saw so many interviews with so many of the other actors. They were like, I auditioned for that. Oh, you did, and they didn't even know that they had also auditioned for it. So during the interview, they would all find out that each other had auditioned for the other role. Yeah, I mean, I grew up on The Sopranos. It's my favorite show of all time. I still go back and watch some episodes. I love how they set it up where every year a new big guest star would come on board. And it was just so genius. I would say without The Sopranos, there would have been no – I mean, it opened up – I was talking to my friend about this the other day. The Sopranos basically opened up the doorway for all the other big shows. Like, TV wasn't a big thing.
No, Sopranos put HBO on the map.
And then just and the fact that, you know, Meryl Streep is doing, you know, Only Murders in the Building now on Hulu.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
I mean, the big stars were not doing TV before then. And then, you know, it just happened that everybody started to, you know, it became a thing. And then, you know, Breaking Bad came out, you know, Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
All of this stuff spun out of the success of The Sopranos and everything. How does it feel to just be part of history like that?
I feel like for some reason, I mean, I'm a Sagittarius. I'm the luckiest sign. I'm on the cusp. I'm Sag and Scorpio, but I think I'm more Sag because I feel like I'm one of the luckiest people because I always end up getting on something that becomes like iconic.
Bronx Tale, Sopranos, The Irishman.
Yeah, like I feel like I lucked out. Like these... I can't, like, a Bronx Tale just hit its 30th anniversary.
I saw.
All got to see it in the Beacon Theater again with Bob and Chaz. It was just amazing.
Yeah, it's I saw on your amazing. Instagram it's pictures so, of it. Yeah.
It feels good. And as far as I lucked out, as far as my co-stars on The Sopranos, it's absolutely true. There's a lot of people on that show.
Yep.
And it's very unheard of, but we all love each other. We all were rooting for each other and had each other's backs and were very close knit. We're all very close. And when we would go to all the awards every year, we got nominated for Emmys and SAG Awards and Golden Globes or whatever. We all traveled together, a lot of us on one plane. It was hilarious. We had a Sopranos bus that took us to, you know, the award shows. We'd get in this big bus, the Sopranos bus, and we just had a lot of laughs and a really good time, and everybody was very close.
Yeah.
That was probably one of the best things about it. We were truly like a family.
What was, I think on Michael Imperioli's page the other day, he posted a picture with James Gandolfini. I think it's been 10 years since his passing.
Yeah.
What was it like working with James Gandolfini? What kind of, what do you remember about him?
Before I did Sopranos, the first season, the pilot, only the pilot. Right after that, James's best friend, Billy Garcia, director, writer, asked me to do a short film, and I played James's wife.
In the short?
Yeah. And it's good. I could send you the link. Yeah. It's called A Whole New Day. And so I really got to work with James in that, and I love that short. He's so good in that. Oh, my God. But And then we went back to the first, then we got called back. They said they picked it up. And we went back to the first season. And that's when I started really getting to know James. And, I mean, it, every single one of us looked up to him. He was really, like, our leader and mm-hmm. our, like, he was the leader of the pack.
Yeah.
And we loved him so much.
He was absolutely, I think he changed, you know, the image of a leading man, but in a lot of ways, he was a strong actor, very strong. Some of those scenes, I go back and I, like, just to be inspired sometimes, there's a scene with him. There's a scene of yours that I love that I really want to talk about. But there's a scene where him and Edie Falco get into that huge fight after she finds out that he has slept with his mother's caretaker.
Yeah.
It's like a 9-minute fight scene. If people haven't watched it, look it up. You can go to YouTube. Yeah. And it's like a masterclass in acting. It's unbelievable. Yeah. But he was very, very – everybody that's met him and always has wonderful things
he
to say about him.
Yeah. He was really the best.
And there's a scene, actually, there's an episode with that is centered around you and Artie Bucco. And it was after the restaurant has burnt down. And there's an episode in which I think you guys are waiting to – you guys don't have another restaurant yet. But then there's an event that Carmela's throwing at her house.
Oh.
And then she asks you to cater it.
Yeah.
There's a wonderful scene between you guys where you end up telling her that you slept with Tony.
Yeah.
But the genius of the show, it's so incredible the way it was set up, is the entire episode leading up to that. And it's like a 2-minute scene between you and Edie.
Yeah.
But the entire episode leading up to it just builds and builds and builds in this power kind of dynamic where they make you and Artie look very much, you know, they don't have a restaurant.
Yeah.
She's like, oh, well, you know, I'll get Charmaine to cater it.
Yeah.
You know, we'll help her out. They could use the money, all this sort of stuff. And it's almost like there's a huge power dynamic because she's holding power over you.
Yeah.
And it goes, and even there's a moment in one of the episodes where she goes like this
with
to
the
you.
Finger.
I always remember it. Always remember it. I was like, because even watching, I was like, man, that's fucked up. And then, there's the wonderful scene when you guys are packing up, you know, the day is over. And I forget what leads to it, but, you know, you say to her, you know, that, you know, you could have been with somebody like that and you don't want.
No, I said I slept with Tony.
Yeah, yeah.
He wasn't for me.
He wasn't for me. And almost instantly, the power shifts.
Yeah.
It's like it completely changes everything.
I knocked her off the pedestal.
Completely. And by the way, it's a scene that I always remembered as somebody that's seen every episode a gazillion times. It's always like a checkpoint that you can go to. Because every time in the show after that, when I would see Carmela and Charmaine in a scene together, I always would think about that scene. It's very interesting. It would always come up to me because I would see them together. I was like, I remember that fucking scene.
Yeah,
it would always pop up in mind. What was being on set like? I mean, there was so many Dominic Chianese, who I'm obsessed with. There's also a scene where I'm obsessed. He sings. What's the name of the song?
The one where we're all there and it goes
everybody's,
on all of us.
Everybody's in the scene. It's in the restaurant. Everybody's reflecting. He starts singing in the restaurant and he stands up and someone says, sing it, Junior, whatever. And he gets up and the camera pans to every single person.
Yeah.
And everyone's got something different. What's her name? Meadow's drinking.
Yeah, Meadow's drinking.
She's drunk. She's drinking over there and something else is happening somewhere else and all that. But it literally goes one by one and everybody's having this moment and it pans to you guys and you get emotional about it. There's all this. What was filming that like, being there for a scene like that?
That was a lot of fun that day because we all got to be in the scene together and we always liked that.
Yeah.
Because let me tell you, craft service on Sopranos was like being at an Italian wedding. I mean, literally,
we had a prosciutto slicer.
I mean, it was just insanity. There's never been another craft service like that ever
in the history
of TV.
Yeah.
And so we liked in the in-betweens, you know, just being, like I said, we were lucky that we all loved each other and liked each other. So it was like being at work with all your friends and doing what you love. When they say, oh, you know, what's the saying? If you do what you love, it's not like work. You're never working. And that show was the absolute truth.
Yeah.
So it was a lot of fun. And I love Johnny V. You know, he's my favorite husband of all time. I love Johnny.
Yeah, you guys were great.
Yeah,
I mean, everybody
I love
Johnny. Was all of the recurring characters, the guest stars that would pop up. Richie Aprile scared the daylight. I forget the actor's name, but the guy that played
David Proval.
Scared the daylight out of me.
Yeah.
I mean, what a vicious guy. Out of all of them, I mean, don't get me wrong, Joey Pants' character was
Joey.
Ralph. Yeah. Ralph Cifaretto.
Yeah.
Ralph was nuts, but there was something about Richie that just would scare the daylights out of you. And he was so small, too, and something vicious about him. But I loved everybody. I mean, the show. I actually would like to play a little game.
What are we on, Jimmy Fallon now?
I have some Sopranos quotes here. And I'm just going to read them out. And I want to see if you can guess which character.
I probably won't. But I'm the worst.
We'll just try. We'll see.
I'm lucky I remember my lines.
Okay. You ready?
Go ahead.
All right. If you can quote the rules, then you can obey them.
I'm going to say James.
Yeah. That was Tony Soprano. Yep. Nice. Okay. I was born, grew up, spent a few years in the army, a few more in the can, and here I am, a half a wise guy. So what? This is a tough one, I think.
I'm going to say Joey Pants.
No, Tony Sirico.
Oh, Tony. Wow.
Paulie Walnuts, yep. All right. I love this one. I wish the Lord would take me now.
Oh, that's Olivia.
Yeah, I loved it when she would say that. All right, here we go. Teddy Roosevelt once gave an entire speech with a bullet lodged in his chest. Some things are just a matter of duty. It's another hard one.
Is that Hesh?
No, it was Junior.
Oh, okay.
Junior. And then this one, I love this line. This ain't negotiating time. This is Scarface, final scene, fucking bazookas
under.
Yeah, Michael Imperioli. And then this one you should know. Stop worrying about me. We both made our choices. I'm fine with mine.
Show me Puka.
That was your famous line of the scene. Amazing.
No, I think stop squeezing the quail was my favorite line.
Which one was that?
When I'm cooking and I say, would you stop squeezing the quail?
Just stop squeezing the quail. Yeah, that's great.
He goes, no, the funk and then whatever he was talking about. I said, would you watch what you're doing? You're squeezing the quail. I thought that was so funny.
I mean, so many things are so funny. When Paulie goes into the Starbucks, do you remember that?
Oh, God, yeah.
And he goes crazy about the stealing of the culture.
Yes.
Oh, my God. It's one of the funniest things.
He was amazing. You know, it's funny because a lot of people tell me, oh, my God, you were so funny on The Sopranos. Your character was hysterical. I was like, I wasn't trying to be funny.
I think that's what was funny about it.
It shocked me, and I was like, am I insulted because I was trying to be dramatic and I'm coming off funny? But
no,
you know
it was
weird?
It was the truth of it. It was so
what's
funny.
What's weird is that I just saw, which I didn't think I was funny at all while I was doing it. I didn't even think this is funny. Oh, that's funny. The movie that I just did with De Niro, mm-hmm. I went to go do looping, you know, mm-hmm. some ADR, and, you know, they let you see the whole scene and then you loop.
Right.
I was laughing out loud at what the hell I was saying. Like, I didn't think this was funny when I was saying it. This is hilarious. Yeah. And then they showed me another scene. I go, oh, my God, I'm funny in this.
Yeah.
And I didn't think I was funny at all, and I wasn't trying to be funny. But what I'm saying, it's serious,
yeah.
But it's ridiculous.
Yeah, though it's always the funniest when it's the most serious, the most serious of it. Let's talk about you working with Martin Scorsese, The Irishman, another incredible film. I can't imagine being in a car with Joe Pesci, Robert De Niro, and then having Martin Scorsese direct. And what were those days like? How many days
surreal?
Was that?
Surreal.
You guys were in the middle of nowhere.
Surreal. When we were filming on the highway in that car, we were on a highway in whatever that town is over the Tappan Zee Bridge, like Nyack.
Okay.
And so we were on this road that they closed down.
Mm-hmm.
And we were in that car a long, like couple of days. It took a while to do that. That was like day after day. And at one point that I was sitting in the back of the car, and when they would tweak things, and you'd have to just sit there when you're not working, and you're like, oh, guys, give us a minute. We have a technical, and we'd be sitting in that car. Mm-hmm. That was surreal for me to be like, we're just talking, or Stephanie and I would just talk, and then they were talking, and then I would stop and go and realize, this is a fucking dream right now. Yeah. We're just casually talking with Joe Pesci and Robert De Niro, talking casually about their lives, and we're just back here, and, you know, and it's like, hey, Bob, what about that? Oh, Joe, blah, 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 blah. And like, how lucky am I? And I always try to be in that moment and just say, remember this, cherish this, don't, you know, because there's so many things that I did years ago that I go, God, I wish I would have been more aware and more in it, like, you know, but I was all over the place because mm-hmm. I was new in it and it was exciting. And this one I was like, and every time the most bizarre thing was the scene when we were at the hall, when De Niro was, did you see the film?
Yes.
When they were up, it was Pacino, Ray Romano.
Oh, the award scene.
Bobby Cannavale, like everybody was there that day. And that scene took like 3 days. And I remember at one point.
Ray Romano was
looking
there.
Looking around, yeah. saying, this is Harvey, so
was Harvey
crazy.
Keitel
we
there
have,
too?
We have the, Harvey Keitel, we have the most classic Last of the Mohegans, yeah. including Marty,
yeah.
director, is like right here. How lucky am I? Again, Sagittarius. Like, I'm here with these people playing Joe Pesci's wife. Like, this is insane. And Marty coming over, like when Marty would stick his head in the car and those other scenes,
mm-hmm.
Marty would stick his head in and go, you know, and give me a note.
Mm-hmm.
And I would just be looking at him like,
that's
okay, this is crazy, and feel so blessed.
Yeah. What's
a kid on Christmas every day.
Yeah. How does he direct? Like, does he give you like very specific? Does he give you like a, I don't know, some directors that you work with, they'll be like, yeah, that was good, but like, you know, maybe move your head on this line or something. Like, some people are very technical. Some
you
people
know,
will
I think
just,
that's why Marty likes to meet with people. He met. I auditioned, and then now it's time to go meet Marty. You meet him in a hotel room, this fancy, beautiful hotel. They rent out a whole room, and then you go meet Marty. You just talk to Marty.
Huh. This is after you got the part? Or did you not have
it
yet?
No, I didn't have the part yet.
Oh, so you were just
so
meeting
him. So I think
him.
He decides already, and that we'll get back to what's he like as a director, is mm-hmm. that he already decided, talking to you on a personal note,
mm-hmm.
okay, this is the person. That's what I mean by I'm glad when I have to audition because maybe you're not right for the role. Maybe I auditioned great for it, but as a person, he doesn't think that I have the qualities of this character. Anyway, I met with him, and I think right there he decides in his mind, I can trust her.
Right.
She's going to do this, right?
Right.
So then when you're working with him, the notes aren't huge, like, notes. They're just basically, you know, I like what you're doing. Keep that up. But think about what you said to me that day. You know, you talked about, you know, this.
Oh,
you
really?
Talked about that. Because then we, you know, at the meeting with him in the hotel, I did at the end, like at the last, if I was there an hour and something, the last 15 minutes, then we just slowly, casually, organically went into the character and talking about that.
Oh, I see.
So he said, remember that thing we talked about? That, let's do that. And I'm like, oh, and then I knew what he wanted.
I see.
So I think originally, you know, he makes his mind up on a personal thing.
Mm-hmm. Does he give Bob notes? I'm so curious.
I mean, I see him and Bob going in the corner,
really?
You know, talking
wow.
all the time. Barry and Bob did it, you know, always talking. Bob's always talking.
Yeah. That's incredible. Let's talk about Wise Guy, or Wise Guys, is it? This new film with Barry Levinson directing, Robert De Niro playing two characters from what I read.
Yes.
He's playing Vito Genovese, and he's also playing Frank Costello.
Yes.
And you play Anna Genovese,
yeah.
who is Vito Genovese's wife.
Yeah.
I just saw something with Vito Genovese's real daughter online. She was doing these, I don't know if you saw
wow.
any of that during your research. Yeah, she's a medium, or like one of those like people that channels like the dead or something like that.
Are you sure it was his daughter or?
Vito's real daughter, yeah.
Oh.
Vito Genovese's daughter, yeah.
Okay.
And she was on a bunch of podcasts. I don't know, I forget what podcast
oh, wow.
she was on. But
I didn't see that.
Yeah, very interesting. But what kind of research did you do to prepare? Is there a lot of, because Vito was a very, I know a little bit about the mob, just being young and being very interested in the mafia
yeah.
and mafia films and all that kind of stuff. Vito Genovese, if people don't know, was the boss of the Genovese family. Oh, sorry. I have it wrong. It's not the daughter of Vito Genovese. She would have been Giganti, who was the boss of the Genovese
yes.
family later.
Who I play Giganti's wife on Godfather of Harlem.
Yes. Sorry, that was my mistake. You were right.
Yeah.
So Vito Genovese was the boss of the Genovese
yes.
family. And was there a lot of information about Anna? Anything
no,
written down?
No, you know, that's the funny thing. There's no recordings of her live. There's recordings of her, but no sound.
Mm.
So I saw her coming out of a court, walking, but there's no recordings of her sound, her voice, never anything. So I kind of like that better
yeah.
because then I get to create the essence of who I think she is and my imagination gets to, I get to play more and use what I feel personally.
Mm-hmm.
And bring my personal things in more than something trying to be this, recreate this person. To me, it's more about the essence. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So, yeah, it gives you a lot more room to play.
Yeah, I didn't really do a lot. I did research on like what she looked like. And I was, you know, more about the times of how people speak. It's more singy-songy in the 50s. Everybody talk like more. They drag their words out more.
Yeah.
So I try to talk more like that than contemporary. I did that on Godfather Harlem, too. And it's a period piece. But really, and I'm glad Barry works like that. He's like, no imitations.
Yeah.
Don't imitate her. Come yeah. to what, you know, your version of that is going to be.
Are you guys already done shooting?
Yeah, we were done. Yeah.
When do you know? Do you have any idea about when the film
will be
released?
They announced that it's coming out February 2nd.
February 2nd. Oh, so that's not that far away.
Yeah.
Are you excited for that?
Oh my God, I'm so excited.
Are you able to divulge any information? I have a feeling from a little bit of what I know, Frank Costello was shot, but survived a hit. From Genovese.
Yeah, and it was chin who shot him.
Yeah. And is this story kind of...
Oh, yeah.
They're both... Is that what
it's
about?
To me, I think the story is more about... Because I was trying to figure out, well, what's the through line? What is this about? What makes this different? Who wants to see another gangster movie?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what is this really about? And I feel, to me, it's about... It's a relationship about friendship and loyalty and... they grew up together as kids. They
right.
grew up in the same neighborhood and they were good friends, childhood friends, and how they changed and how they actually ended up being, you know, going against each other, but not really. Like he shot him, but then he forgave him. He literally forgave him,
yeah.
verbally forgave him, said, all right, you know, but I, it's more about a friendship. It
mm-hmm.
shows the friendship, the declining friendship. But they never really were soul enemies,
mm-hmm.
but it wasn't really said. So it wasn't like, you know, a war against each other. It was a kind of a silent thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought I think the script is so interesting. I think De Niro, I saw him as Genovese and I saw him as Costello.
Mm-hmm.
And I personally think, and I'm not just saying it, I think this is going to be one of his
greatest.
Yeah. And I think that he is on his A game. And I think it's going to be kind of a, if I could say it, like a tour de force role for him.
Amazing.
Playing two people.
Yeah, I hate when people get on his case about stuff. They're like, oh yeah, he hasn't done it. I'm like, first of all, if any actor can ever put out one performance,
yes,
like Raging Bull or Godfather 2 or Cape Fear or Deer Hunter or Goodfellas or Casino. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Do one. Do yeah. Taxi Driver.
Yeah.
Give me a break. You do
right.
one of those roles and then talk and all that stuff.
That's
but
right.
I always,
analyze this comedy.
Hilarious. He's hilarious
yeah.
in those roles.
Yeah.
And it's just like, yeah, these people don't know anything about acting.
I think this is going to be one of the classics.
Yeah, I thought he was fantastic in The Irishman. There's that scene where he calls, there's a scene where he's in the bedroom and he calls Al Pacino's wife when Jimmy Hoffa's killed.
Oh, yeah.
There's that scene where he goes in the bedroom and he calls her.
It kills me.
Oh, my God. I was like, oh, my God, that's the remnant.
That killed me.
Yeah, it was a very, 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 very strong scene, but. What do you have? Anything else coming up after Wise Guys? Anything you're working on that you're excited
well, right
about?
Right now, really, I'm really excited about this. I was always told, because I had a very crazy childhood,
mm-hmm.
And I have a lot of stories to tell. Like,
are you writing?
Jaw
like-
dropping.
Okay.
So I started writing, I said, I'm going to just do vignettes. I'm going to do like small vignettes because I don't know how to write a whole movie. I'm not a writer, but I can tell each story separately in a vignette. And I started and I ended up, I have seven of them all together right now. I have started the eighth one and that they're 15 to 20 minutes each. So now I'm going to put them together, and that's, I have a whole movie now. Now I have a whole movie from doing the vignettes. So I'm excited about that because, you know, Colin Quinn and I also have something that, and
Colin Quinn from Saturday
SNL,
Night Live?
He's a comedian, a writer, brilliant writer.
Yes.
So I'm really excited about that project. We filmed it and we're trying to do these, this Colin Quinn wrote all these amazing monologues. They're
nice.
Like 10-page monologues.
Oh, nice.
So, and they're like New York stories.
Beautiful.
So we filmed two
really
of them.
Cool.
And he wants to have it as a series, like you see two each week.
Oh, that's
and, but
great.
It's about the buildings of New York, like stories behind the iconic buildings of New York, the Twin Towers, the Chrysler Building, the Empire State Building, and the people who... The little guys, the working class people who work in them and helped.
And what medium are you guys going to release it on? Is it going to be like on?
Well, right now we're still trying to figure it out, but we did that, and I'm excited about that.
Yeah.
And right now we're going to read them as almost like a play. Vincent did his, and then I think I'm going to be doing mine in 2 weeks in front of a live audience. So we're just kind of workshopping, figuring out where they're going to fit and how we're going to do that. And then my short stories I want to film. You know, I want to get funds and do it.
Yeah. I know you also paint.
I also paint.
How did that happen?
You know, I'm...
Your paintings are quite good.
Thank you.
Yeah. Where can people...
I've had shows.
Yeah. I mean, where is there anywhere that people can actually go online and check them out?
No, just my Instagram.
Just your Instagram? Yeah.
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 Catherine Arducci on Instagram.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's the only place. I don't really advertise or say I'm selling them, but they just sell themselves.
Nice.
But when I have a show, I'll put it out there.
Yeah.
Like if I have a space that I'm showing.
When did you know you could paint?
You know, I still don't know. I just do it.
It's
got to come
thing?
Out. Yeah, it's a natural thing.
So you never took any sort of...
I took anatomy class, like live drawings of nude people.
Okay.
They would get on a stand and we'd draw them quick. I did that maybe for about a year, just drawing, you know, pencil, and then just started painting on my own, like about 1993.
Huh. Interesting.
Vinnie Pastore has the first big thing that I've ever painted.
Oh, wow. That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's really cool. Do you prefer, I'm assuming you prefer acting over, or do you have any... Anyone?
I mean, I prefer acting. If I had to choose one, it's going to be acting.
Mm-hmm.
But painting is another it's the best thing. It's the best tool that I have when I'm not working in between to not stay stagnant and keep my creative juices flowing and express myself. Mm-hmm. So it's there for me and it's like saves me.
Did you, I'm assuming you painted a lot during the, were you here during the pandemic?
Like a mad woman.
Yeah.
And I couldn't believe during the pandemic, I would put my painting, I was putting them up like every day. I was painting, like really a mad woman. I have a studio in my house. Like,
oh, wow.
I made a proper studio and I was putting them up and selling them as I was. I couldn't even put them up fast enough during the pandemic. People were buying art during the pandemic. They had nothing else to do.
Yeah.
So I was putting them up and selling them.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Well, we have a lot of young actors who watch the podcast, a lot of aspiring actors. Any advice, I don't know about advice, but maybe some sort of tips for people coming up, people that have even been in the, like somebody like me that's been in the business for a long time, but things have been good and then bad, something like that. Any sort of advice to keep them going or keep your creative juices going and also maybe some sort of thing to maybe not give up or anything like that from any experiences that you have?
Well, it's a question that I have for you or anybody else who's struggling. And it's a question that I've had for myself that mm-hmm. has helped me. And the question is, do you need to do this? Were you born? Really, you got to ask yourself, mm-hmm. was I born to do this, that I have to do it? And if I don't do it, I will not be a happy person on this planet. Mm-hmm. That I have to do it to survive. And I cannot do anything else. Now, if you say, well, I need to make money, then I definitely suggest you have a job that allows you to have the flexibility to do your auditions or, try to find something. You work from home or wait tables like I did. Mm-hmm. But you got to give up, not necessarily your 9-to-5 cush job, but you have to have an income so that you don't get discouraged. And it's not just about the money. Like, I can't make so many people quit because they're not making money.
Right.
But keep a job that you can pay your bills. Mm-hmm. But if you have to do this and it is your calling from whatever your spiritual thing is that you pray to, mm-hmm. your higher power, it is your calling and you need to do it. You have to do it. It's you should never feel discouraged because you can do it in a class. I can answer for me. As long as I have a place to get it out, whether it's on canvas, whether it's in a class, whether it's reading plays with other people, whether it's I'm a member of the actor's studio. I made sure I got in the actor's studio. I can get up on stage. I can put a scene up. I have to get it out of me. However, I got to get it out of me because it has to come out of me or I am going to die. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to be happy. As long as I'm getting it out of me, I'm happy. Mm-hmm. If I can get a job that pays and I can get it out of me, that's the cherry on top. But I mainly have to just get this out of me. Mm-hmm. I don't need the fame. I don't need, to be rich. I need to just pay my bills. Like I said, get mm-hmm. yourself a job that you can pay your rent, keep a roof over your head. Mm-hmm. But if you need to do it, just always know you got to stay with it if you need to do it. You have to say it. You cannot give up. Mm-hmm. If you know that you have to do it, if you know that you have something inside you that you need to express to the world and get out, then you have to do it, right? Whether you want to do it or not, you have to. You have to share it, your gift. And that should help you get through, and find a way that when you're not doing it, to get with other actors and like-minded people and just read plays. You could do it in your house. Start a group where every week somebody picks out a play, read it. All of you can read it, act it out, get it up on its feet right in your house. You don't need to be on a stage with people looking at you. Just get it out. You need to get it out, really, mainly. That's why we walk around sad, because we have something that we need to share and we don't know where to put that creativity. Oh my God, I got all this inside me. Where do I put it? Put it on a canvas. Get it out of your mouth to another person. Read the play. Get it out. Express yourself. If you need to not just read it robotically, get it on your feet. Be in your living room. Move your furniture out of the way. Put it up. Get three people to look at you if you want to put it up, if you want to act it out. You have to get it out. So if you keep it bare bones like that and you keep it just something from the heart, something that you need to do, and spiritually, you will never be unhappy. You will be happy to be this person, this artist. But if you're just worried about, oh my God, I need to make money and I need to be on a series, I need to get that, you're not. Because even in my downtime, like I said to you, I at least created something that I could still express myself. And I'm not as sad. I'm not as like, oh my God, this yearning to express myself, because I've created this art form, other art form, which is my painting. And then I also got myself in the actor's studio. So now, oh my God, I want to do a play now. I want to do a scene. I need to work with another person and get it out and be in front of people. Okay, get in the actor's studio. Go get a play. Sign yourself up to start doing scenes. As long as I'm getting it out, I don't need to get paid to get it out. That's a real artist. And if you're not that, then no. Go do a 9-to-5 job that you'll be happy with, making a ton of money, and that's it.
That was wonderful.
Does that even make sense?
It made a lot of sense.
Because when I talk, I leave the room.
No, I think there was a quote where somebody said, if you wake up in the morning and you know that, you know, you can't go another day without not doing it, then that's when you know it's for you.
Yeah. And it's not like they say, oh God, you have to do something every day. I don't believe that. Some days you just need to be quiet, because in the days when I'm quiet, I'm not doing anything, and I may look like I'm not doing anything. A lot is going on in my mind where I'm thinking about things. Like, I thought about writing my vignettes for a long time, and maybe those quiet days I was thinking about stories. How would I tell that? This, you know, those are my quiet days when I'm really not doing anything. I'm not even writing them, but I'm thinking about that. I'm still being creative thinking about it.
Amazing. Well, I think with that, that was wonderful. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you so much for coming and doing this. It was really, really sweet and nice of you. I can't wait to see Wise Guys. Going to be coming out February, hopefully, of next year in theaters, I'm assuming. So very, very excited about that. And very excited for anything else you got going on. I will be looking out for everything.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you.
It was wonderful.
Thanks.